This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Cedarside. Cedarside's original 100% organic insect spray kills bed bugs, mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, mites, scorpions, roaches, and more, but is completely safe for your home, pets, and family. Go to Cedarside.com, use coupon code Hoffman at checkout for free shipping, or call 800-842-1464 and mention you heard it here.
Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it is once again time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions related to medicine and nutrition. How are you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
And by way of introduction, I'm familiar to the vast majority of you, and so is Layla, but once again, Layla is our Hoffman Center nutritionist. She is also a registered dietitian and has an advanced master's degree in the field of nutrition. We work today on a daily basis solving patient problems. So how are you doing as summer progresses?
Yeah, it's already July, huh? it always goes so fast.
You get that little wistfulness, huh?
Yeah.
Are you one of these people who starts getting these like back-to-school dreams?
No, not anymore.
Oh, yeah. I tell you, you know, so much of my life was about education and... Yeah. You know, like the little summer that you got in between, that I tend to, as the summer progresses, I start getting this like back to school dreams. Like I show up and, you know, I don't know where to register. And, you know, it's weird.
I've had not back to school dreams, but I've had nightmares where I find out that I'm about to graduate, but I forgot to take a physics course where I need four semesters finished in 6 weeks, or a math course. And I wake up almost in a cold sweat. I'm like, oh my God, I'm not going to graduate.
I get that too. And sometimes, I have a dream where I'm fully cognizant that I'm 62 years old, but it's somehow discovered that I skipped a course in college or something, so they're going to take away my my degree.
Yeah.
So, I know, it's like, you know, school anxiety, something, you know, I guess people who are overeducated have school anxiety. So, this week, you know, I was, actually last week, I was privileged to see, I was invited to participate, actually, on the panel at a showing of a movie called Trace Amounts, which I want to tell our listeners about. It's a movie that was done in 2014, and you can go to traceamounts.com, I think, or maybe traceamounts.org. Just Google it. And it is an amazing movie about mercury in vaccines. That's really the theme. And, yeah, I know that this has been thoroughly debunked, and they've done, you know, the research, and now they claim that mercury in vaccines is inconsequential and makes no difference whatsoever. But you got to see this movie, because the movie is a very, very well done critique of what I think amounts to a cover up about the relationship between mercury and vaccines and autism. And, you know, I don't want to sound like an anti-vaxxer fanatic, you know, because the emotions run hot and heavy about this. I mean, it's like global warming deniers, you know, it's like you're a troglodyte if you don't go with the settled science on this. But when it comes to vaccines, I think some real questions, because we're piling more and more vaccines on kids, and we're seeing an increase in autism. Okay, we're also seeing an increase in industrial pollution. We're seeing an increase in, you know, possibly poor diet, excess use of antibiotics. There are many factors that can be we can attribute this to. But really, we need to pay more attention to the amount of mercury that we put into our kids. Because, you know, every couple of years we add a new mandatory vaccine.
Yes.
And so there are some real concerns about that, and the concerns are very well argued for in this movie. And I think that anyone who is a parent or an expectant parent, you know, contemplating having children, really should see this movie so that you can make some savvy choices. Now, at the risk of, and this is a real issue, because there was a case recently of a woman who died due to measles, which is unusual. It hasn't happened since 2002.
Wow.
But the woman in question was a severely immunosuppressed woman who was on immunosuppressant medication. I don't know for what reason, whether it was to prevent organ rejection. She might have been a transplant recipient, or she may have been on one of these immunosuppressive medications for an autoimmune disease. Mm-hmm. So she was a real walking setup for more serious consequences of getting the measles, and she died. But, you know, considering that that's one death in 12 years, you know, I would say that the specter of us having lots and lots of problems from a certain percentage of people who are unvaccinated versus the potential for harm of all this mercury that's being put into kids. I mean, I don't know the answer. I'm not saying that we shouldn't vaccinate. I'm not saying that mercury is the definitive problem. I think we just need to push back on people who say it's the science is settled. Let's forget. They actually have said this. They've editorialized in medical journals like it's we definitively found that mercury is not a problem. But when you look at this movie, it's a pretty sophisticated movie because they go into the science and they go into the statistics and they show how some of the original studies showed a definite correlation between the number of vaccines you received and your risk of autism. And then, because this was a conclusion that they just could not accept, that you know how you can tweak data and manipulate data, and you can throw out some cases. You say, well, this case is, we're going to use an exclusion criterion to
lies,
take this
case. Lies and statistics.
Right. That's the famous saying by Mark Twain is, there are lies, damn lies, and statistics. I heartily recommend this movie to the public. And we'll talk about it more. Maybe I'll try and get the producer of that movie on for a podcast to talk a little bit about it.
And, you know, it adds to the burden of mercury in our environment.
Right.
Seafood,
right.
For
which
instance.
Which we, you know, from seafood, we get it in
high fructose corn syrup. We get it in wine.
And we get it from our fillings.
We're getting from our fillings.
Right.
I mean.
And so, and mercury is a pretty, pretty toxic substance.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a concern. And one of the things we do here at the Hoffman Center is we do screen people for mercury and we do detoxify from mercury.
Mm-hmm.
There's controversy over that, too. It's like, oh, does it matter? You know, unless you fall into a vat of mercury at a battery factory or a fluorescent light factory, are you really at risk? But, you know,
you used to play with the mercury in your thermometer when it broke.
It's crazy paradoxical because what they do is they say to pregnant women that this is the maximum amount of fish you should have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is the maximum. Don't have more than this amount of fish, like certain fish, like tuna, shark, they say, because that adds up to the wrong or a dangerous amount of mercury.
Yeah.
And then they say to pregnant women, oh, you have to get the flu shot because now it's very dangerous if a pregnant woman gets the flu because it could be very damaging to the fetus, which is true.
It
could be devastating to the fetus.
Yeah.
But the vaccine contains so much more mercury than you get from eating the fish.
Wow.
That, and they demonstrate that in the movie.
Mm.
And, I don't get it. I don't get it. Like, it's almost like
so
a real disconnect.
So the case is not settled. It's not settled.
In my opinion, it's not settled. And unfortunately, they just make fun of people who are concerned about it. They say they're a bunch of idiots. They're anti-science, blah, blah, blah. And, the other thing about it is they went to the Amish country in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And they interviewed a pediatrician who was responsible for like 3,000 or 4,000 children. And he said, I've not seen one case of autism among the Amish children.
Wow.
He said, we see other problems, but we don't see any autism among the Amish children. Now, he said, if in an ordinary pediatric practice, mm-hmm. anywhere in the United States, if you had 3,000 or 4,000 children under your care, you would have at least scores of autism patients, not just one or two, because the percentage now is like 1 in 70 or something like that.
Yeah.
Scary. So anyway, it's an issue that's really tough, but we have to ask ourselves these hard questions because otherwise, you know, we're gonna in an effort to vaccinate everyone against all conceivable manner of misfortune, we may expose our kids to unnecessary risks. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the movie is Trace Amounts. Check it out.
Okay.
All right. So we have questions.
Yes, we do. We have one from Eunice. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. Recently, I've been reading about the amount of AGEs, advanced glycation end products, in various foods. Meats are among the highest, especially when roasted, grilled, or otherwise cooked at high temperatures. How concerned should a person be about the amount of AGEs in their diet?
Well, you happen to be the world's authority on AGEs,
yeah.
AGEs, because you just wrote an article about
it. I just wrote an article about that in our newsletter.
In our newsletter.
Yeah.
And it's up at drhoffman.com. And by the way, I know you don't participate in Facebook.
Yes.
But I post your articles in Facebook, and that got like 2,000 hits. It got like a
lot
of hits.
Thank you for posting it.
No, because I want to get the word out. I mean, it's quality articles. I want to put them on Facebook, and people were like all over that article.
Great. Yeah. So there are two ways that advanced glycation end products can happen. From cooking our foods at high temps, not using a moist heat, like in meats and so forth and so on. The other way is endogenously. We produce AGEs from poor diet, too much sugar,
so help
stress.
Help us out. Precisely what is an AGE?
Advanced glycation end product is when sugar hooks up to an amino acid, the building blocks of proteins, and it glycates it.
Mm-hmm.
Think rust,
right.
Think aging, think inflammation, all of that.
Okay, and this should be familiar to a lot of people because there is a blood test that actually is based on a glycated protein, which is hemoglobin A1C.
Yes.
That's a glycosylated or a glycated hemoglobin,
yeah.
Where the presence of sugar in the bloodstream over a period of time, 3 or 4 months,
mm-hmm.
Will change the hemoglobin. It will glycate the hemoglobin
mm-hmm.
to one extent or another, and you can measure that.
Yeah.
So that also occurs just simply in the presence of high blood sugar.
That's true. High blood sugar, which could be caused by a poor diet and all of that, too many carbohydrates, too many sugars. Now, the thing about cooking is we really have to change our approach to a lot of the grilling and roasting and high temperature frying and things like that.
Oh, please don't tell me that during the summer.
I
know it's rough.
I know, yeah.
Yeah.
The thing is that, well, here's the good news about grilling.
I eat a lot of char. I do.
Yeah, I do too.
Right.
I do too. But guess what?
Yeah.
We can marinate the salmon.
I do that.
And the steak.
I do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I make like a flank steak, and if I will put it in with lemon juice.
Perfect.
And
you can use vinegar.
I have a bunch of spices planted in my garden, so I'll put in rosemary.
Nice. Yeah.
And those are antioxidants.
They are.
Rosemary, thyme,
mm-hmm.
Oregano, and, you know, things like that. So I'll marinate chicken breast or something like that, or I'll marinate a skirt steak in
mm-hmm.
that.
Perfect.
Yeah. Okay.
So marinating our meats before we put them on the grill significantly reduces the AGEs. So just by changing that method, adding a marinade, you can go ahead and grill and roast and so forth. The best thing to do is to more poach, boil, stew, steam. These are the preferred methods to keep the AGEs down. But less concentration on cooking, in my opinion, and more concentration on your lifestyle.
Protection.
How you're eating.
Right.
Are you exercising? Are you getting enough sleep?
Right.
We cause AGEs to happen. It's endogenous, too. We are producing
them. As we can see, because diabetics are glycosylated more rapidly.
Right.
And it's not
because they grill a steak.
Right. I think the physical evidence of glycosylation is wrinkling.
Yes.
Skin wrinkling.
Yeah.
And you can sometimes see people age. You know,
it's
a play on words, but ages cause aging.
Yes.
And you can see the hallmarks of aging in some people who are prematurely aged. And one of the agents that really will do that is smoking. You know, you'll see like people get those smoker's wrinkles and,
mm-hmm.
you know, you see
mm-hmm.
sort of that parchment skin. And that's, a sign of the effects of some toxic influence on the body.
Yeah, and these AGEs cause a lot of that collagen cross-linking, which
right.
causes wrinkles and
right.
sagging. I tell patients, if you want to age quickly, eat a lot of sugar and
right.
smoke.
Right, right.
Who wants that advice?
And
right?
grilled meats, possibly the grilled meats, but without the countermeasures such
mm-hmm.
as the spices and the
and the
polyphenols
vinegar, or the citrus-based dressings, all of
olive
these are
oil
helpful.
With
mm-hmm.
Beneficial polyphenols, you know,
yeah.
the green polyphenols and olive oil. You know, and I often put some high-quality olive oil on some of these things mm-hmm. before I cook them. So, okay. And then one other technique that I've heard, and I don't know, I've never tried this, is you can actually put like a dried cranberries or dried blueberries in your burger.
Right.
Like make a blueberry burger.
And the polyphenols help. And apparently, I've never tasted it, but yeah. I heard a blueberry burger tastes kind of good. Now, that's not a burger made completely of blueberries.
Clearly,
it's got some blueberries in it.
Blueberries.
It's got some blueberries in
right,
it.
Right.
But slow cooking, roasting at lower temperatures, you know, taking your rack of lamb and putting it into a 250 oven rather than mm-hmm. a 350,
right.
cooking it for a longer period of time, this is also helpful. Using a slow cooker, a crock pot.
Which I do.
Is also helpful.
Yeah. Which is a technique for, you can make a really nice like pot roast
mm-hmm.
with a slow cooker.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also something where you can sort of like set it up and walk away. You know, you can go to work and it'll
right.
be ready when you come back. Or do it overnight.
Right.
Of course, the problem with doing it overnight is that in the middle of the night you wake up and you go,
"What smells?
It
good.
Smells so good." It's like, oh boy, now you know, it's like now I'm up and I'm like drooling, and you know, so you don't want to taste the pot yeah. roast at like 3 a.m.
Yeah. So lower cooking temperatures, slower cooking, marinating if you're going to grill or roast,
mm-hmm.
right? And otherwise, more poaching, stewing, boiling.
Right.
All of that.
But please don't tell me I can't make my grass-fed grilled burgers.
No, I have to have a skirt steak on the grill.
Right.
I totally get that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm just trying to incinerate them.
No, the char tastes good, right?
Some people say I don't grill. I'm like more like a blacksmith. I need a forge.
Thank you for your question, Eunice. Okay. We've got a question from McCellus. You had a radio spot, Dr. Hoffman, on the Don Stefan radio show about statins and testosterone.
It's the
Doug Stefan.
Doug Stefan.
Pardon
Doug
me.
Doug Stefan.
Yes. How one size does not fit all. Is this true about blood pressure too? 120/80 is the benchmark. But is this just a reference and not the standard for everyone? Is everyone different? Help me out.
It's a good question, and the answer is that it's not a one-size-fits-all, and blood pressure has to be tailored to the circumstance. So, for example, in someone who's had a stroke or someone who's had a heart attack or someone who has congestive heart failure, you really need, or someone who's beginning to have changes in their kidneys associated
yeah.
with chronic hypertension, you really want to nail down the blood pressure. You really want it in the very safe zone.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, there are some studies that suggest, and many of them are done in the third world, because it's hard to find people who have just one single risk factor in America. Mostly people with hypertension in America have multiple risks. They're pre-diabetic, they're obese, they're, you know,
yeah.
got a lot of high cholesterol. But, you know, say, you know, a relatively healthy, physically active person in Mali, you
mm-hmm.
know, in Africa, who has a high blood pressure, that's, say, you know, 140/90,
mm-hmm.
where maybe that would call for action in the United States, that person would, if all the other risk factors are under control, that person may not be at such high risk. So
yeah.
it's a composite of risks. And the other thing is that sometimes we overzealously lower blood pressure. We see an elderly person with slightly high blood pressure, and because the pipes are narrowed in older people and stiffer, the arteries are
yeah.
narrow, the blood doesn't reach the brain as well. So they may need a higher column of steam, so to speak, to get the blood to go all the way up to their brain. And if we lower their blood pressure and we go, oh, great, the blood pressure's 110/70, fantastic, that person may feel weak and woozy and may have brownouts.
Wow.
And may, you know, faint, stumble, and fall, and that's to their detriment, too.
I never considered that. That's
yeah.
interesting.
Yeah. So, it blood pressure is one of those things that I think doctors tend to say, give me a number, like I cholesterol under 200, blood pressure, you know, 120/80. But that's what I call paint-by-numbers medicine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, you know, you want to do a great masterpiece and you get one of those paint-by-numbers kits and you color-code it and, you know, you try to paint the Mona Lisa, but it comes out looking like, you know, like you painted the cat. You know?
Oh, gosh. Oh, Mixellus, thank you for your question. Okay. We have another question from Phyllis. Dear Layla, I read and appreciate your column in Dr. Hoffman's newsletter. Is it possible for you to make recommendations for the care and treatment of chronic herpes simplex virus 2?
See, she doesn't want me to answer the question.
I don't know.
I'm chopped liver. She just wants to ask you the question.
Oh, she knows you're going to get the question,
okay,
too.
Okay, okay.
I've read that there are millions of people suffering from this problem. However, we rarely hear of any new research results. Are there virologists currently conducting medical research on this infection, or is this challenge being neglected? Are there any effective interventions in addition to acyclovir that have come to light in the past several years?
Well, there's several. I'm going to answer it because there's a medical aspect to the question.
Yes,
you can answer
please.
It if you want. But it's okay, so there are these medications that are similar, acyclovir. There's also famvir. Zovirax, there's a variety of antivirals that attack herpes.
Mm-hmm.
And they can be used either to prevent the attacks or to treat the attacks when they occur and reduce the severity of the attacks or shorten the duration of the attacks. The question is, probably there's more research going on because it's such a prevalent problem.
Yeah.
When they say, herpes is forever, it really does appear that there's no way to completely eradicate it.
Yeah.
Whereas we have now treatments with hepatitis C that are very promising that may eradicate it. With HIV, we haven't been able to eradicate that virus. We're controlling it very well, but we're not mm-hmm. eradicating it. And similarly with herpes, we can't seem to quite eradicate it.
Well, the thing about hep C, HIV, is these can prove fatal. Herpes is more of a nuisance, maybe?
Right, so perhaps there's
not as... It's not going to take your life.
Right, there's not like a national crusade. Like, the AIDS thing is a remarkable example of when you put your mind to it, and there's a constituency, and there's mm-hmm. a powerful constituency, and it became a political issue of like, do you want these people to die? They forced the hand of the government to allocate tremendous resources to this. And, of course, there was an enormous financial incentive to get, literally hundreds of thousands of people on very expensive drugs for virtually a lifetime. And, this is a great example of how science and big pharma rose to the occasion, met the challenge in a relatively short time. HIV was discovered during my medical training while I was in medical school in the 1980s. And by the mid-90s, which is just a mere span of 10 years, they came up with some pretty effective therapies. And these people are living, and they may die of old age.
Yeah.
You got like Magic Johnson. I mean, a poster boy for that. And, seems he's doing pretty well. And he's getting on in years, and, maybe he'll lead a normal lifespan. I mean, there are certain complications and problems these medications cause. But so, as the question, did we sufficiently flush it out? Because, so natural strategies for that.
Natural strategies. Taking additional lysine is helpful prophylactically. Avoiding foods that are high in arginine, like Brussels sprouts, corn, chocolate, and nuts. Those are the top four for arginine.
Oh, it's a good thing I don't have herpes, because then I would have to stop eating all this.
Stop eating all the chocolate.
Stuff that I eat. So
There's a doctor who talks about, was it lithium?
Dr. Dak? Very good. This is actually a Jonathan Wright thing that got picked up. Yes, thank you very much, because mm-hmm. there is some suggestion that lithium is used as a medication for a bipolar disorder, but mm-hmm. lithium at lower doses. For bipolar disorder, it's used sometimes doses in the hundreds, but 5 milligrams of lithium, but which, by the way, is a mineral. It's found in
salts,
certain waters. FDR used to love to go to Warm Springs, Georgia, and bathe in the waters there, which supposedly had curative properties. It's a natural spring uh-huh. waters. And Warm Springs, Georgia, I think. And that water is particularly high in lithium.
Mm.
And lithium, of course, may have psychological effects or psychiatric effects, but it may also have antiviral effects. So that's actually worth considering. It's a little known mineral, but it's available in low dose, and that's something that maybe we should be suggesting.
Considering.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's very good that you bring that up. And then, of course, just general immune support with vitamin D and selenium and zinc and, things like AHCC, which is under the brand name Empower. These are things that support the body's natural immune response.
Yeah. Oh, best of luck, Phyllis. Okay.
We're going to have to pause because we usually divide these podcasts into two parts. So let us adjourn for a moment. Our listeners can turn to part two. And what can we anticipate in part two?
How to treat a bleeding ulcer.
Oh, a bleeding ulcer. Okay. Mm. Intriguing. No, that many bleeding ulcers these days because of the advent of powerful acid-blocking medications, but let's tackle that question when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is our weekly Q&A with Layla podcast on Intelligent Medicine.